Silver mail, like circlets of moonbeams, weighed down his limbs and fell onto the bier. Close behind the body stood Nasuada, grave, sable-cloaked, and strong in stature, though tears adorned her countenance. To the side was Hrothgar in dark robes, then Arya. The Council of Elders, all with suitably remorseful expressions, and finally a stream of mourners that extended a mile from Trondheim. Every door and archway of the four-story high hall that led to the central chamber of Trondheim, half a mile away, was thrown open and crowded with humans and dwarves alike. Between the grey bands of faces, the long tapestries swayed as they were brushed with hundreds of sighs and whispers when Saphira and Aragorn came into view. Jormungandr beckoned for them to join him. Trying not to disturb the formation, Aragorn and Saphira picked through the column to the space by his side, earning a disapproving glare from Sabre. Oric went to stand behind Hrothgar. Together they waited, though for what Aragorn knew not. All the lanterns were shuttered halfway so that a cool twilight suffused the air, lending an ethereal feel to the event. No one seemed to move or breathe. For a brief moment, Aragorn fancied that they were all statues frozen for eternity. A single plume of incense drifted from the bier, winding toward the hazy ceiling as it spread the scent of cedar and juniper. It was the only motion in the hall, a whiplash line undulating sinuously from side to side. Deep in Trondheim, a drum gonged. Boom! The sonorous bass note resonated through their bones, vibrating the city mountain and causing it to echo like a great stone bell. They stepped forward. Boom! On the second note, another lower drum melded with the first, each beat rolling inexorably through the hall. The force of the sound propelled them along at a majestic pace. It gave each step significance, a purpose and gravity suited to the occasion. No thought could exist in the throbbing that surrounded them, only an upwelling of emotion that the drums expertly beguiled, summoning tears and bittersweet joy at the same time. Boom! When the tunnel ended, Arjihad's bearers paused between the onyx pillars before gliding into the central chamber. There, Aragorn saw the dwarves grow even more solemn upon beholding Isidar Mithrim. Boom! They walked through a crystal graveyard. A circle of towering shards lay in the centre of the great chamber, surrounding the inlaid hammer and pentacles. Many pieces were larger than Saphira. The rays of the star sapphire still shimmered in the fragments, and on some, petals of the carved rose were visible. Boom! The bearers continued forward, between the countless razor edges. Then the procession turned and descended broad flights of stairs to the tunnels below. Through many caverns they marched, passing stone huts where dwarven children clutched their mothers and stared with wide eyes. Boom! And with that final crescendo, they halted under ribbed stalactites that branched over a great catacomb lined with alcoves. In each alcove lay a tomb carved with a name and clan crest. Thousands, hundreds of thousands, were buried here. The only light came from sparsely placed red lanterns, pale in the shadows. After a moment, the bearers strode to a small room annexed to the main chamber. In the centre, on a raised platform, was a great crypt open to waiting darkness. On the top was carved in runes, "May all, Nerlan, humans and elves, remember this man, for he was noble, strong and wise. Guntera Aruna." When the mourners were gathered around, Arjihad was lowered into the crypt, and those who had known him personally were allowed to approach. Aragorn and Saphira were fifth in line, behind Arya. As they ascended the marble steps to view the body, Aragorn was gripped by an overwhelming sense of sorrow. His anguish compounded by the fact that he considered this as much Murtagh's funeral as Arjihad's. Stopping alongside the tomb, Aragorn gazed down at Arjihad. He appeared far more calm and tranquil than he ever did in life, as if death had recognized his greatness and honored him by removing all traces of his worldly cares. Aragorn had known Arjihad only a short while, but in that time he had come to respect him both as a person and for what he represented, freedom from tyranny. Also, Arjihad was the first person to grant safe haven to Aragorn and Saphira since they left Palancar Valley. Stricken, Aragorn tried to think of the greatest praise he could give. In the end, he whispered past the lump in his throat, "You will be remembered, Arjihad. I swear it. Rest easy, knowing that Nasuada shall continue your work and the Empire will be overthrown because of what you accomplished." Conscious of Saphira's touch on his arm, Aragorn stepped off the platform with her and allowed Jormungandr to take his place. When at last everyone had paid their respects, Nasuada bowed over Arjihad and touched her father's hand, holding it with gentle urgency. Uttering a pained groan, she began to sing in a strange, wailing language, filling the cavern with her lamentations. Then came 12 dwarves, who slid a marble slab over Arjihad's upturned face. And he was no more. Fealty. Aragorn yawned and covered his mouth as people filed into the underground amphitheatre. The spacious arena echoed with a babble of voices discussing the funeral that had just concluded. Aragorn sat on the lowest tier, level with the podium. With him were Oric, Arya, Hrothgar, Nasuada, and the Council of Elders. Saphira stood on the row of stairs that cut upward through the tiers. Leaning over, Oric said,
"Ever since Khorgan, each of our kings has been chosen here. It's fitting that the Varden should do likewise."
It's yet to be seen, thought Aragorn, if this transfer of power will remain peaceful. He rubbed an eye, brushing away fresh tears. The funeral ceremony had left him shaken. Lathered over the remnants of his grief, anxiety now twisted his gut. He worried about his own role in the upcoming events. Even if all went well, he and Saphira were about to make potent enemies. His hand dropped to Zarok and tightened on the pommel. It took several minutes for the amphitheatre to fill. Then Jormungandr stepped up to the podium.
"People of the Varden last stood here 15 years ago, at Daenor's death.
His successor, Arjihad, did more to oppose the Empire and Galbatorix than any before. He won countless battles against superior forces. He nearly killed Durza, putting a scratch on the Shade's blade. And greatest of all, he welcomed Rider Aragorn and Saphira into Trondheim. However, a new leader must be chosen, one who will win us even more glory." Someone high above shouted, "Shade Slayer!" Aragorn tried not to react. He was pleased to see that Jormungandr did not even blink. He said,
"Perhaps in years to come, but he has other duties and responsibilities now. No, the Council of Elders has thought long on this. We need one who understands our needs and wants, one who has lived and suffered alongside us, one who refused to flee even when battle was imminent."
At that moment, Aragorn sensed comprehension rush through the listeners. The name came as a whisper from a thousand throats and was uttered by Jormungandr himself.
"Nasuada!"
With a bow, Jormungandr stepped aside. Next was Arya. She surveyed the waiting audience, then said,
"The elves honour Arjihad tonight, and on behalf of Queen Islanzadi, I recognise Nasuada's ascension and offer her the same support and friendship we extended to her father. May the stars watch over her."
Hrothgar took the podium and stated gruffly,
"I too support Nasuada, as do the clans."
He moved aside. Then it was Aragorn's turn. Standing before the crowd with all eyes upon him and Saphira, he said,
"We support Nasuada as well."
Saphira growled in affirmation. Pledges spoken, the Council of Elders lined themselves on either side of the podium, Jormungandr at their head. Bearing herself proudly, Nasuada approached and knelt before him, her dress splayed in raven billows. Raising his voice, Jormungandr said,
"By the right of inheritance and succession, we have chosen Nasuada. By merit of her father's achievements and the blessings of her peers, we have chosen Nasuada. I now ask you, have we chosen well?"
The roar was overwhelming.
"Yes!"
Jormungandr nodded.
"Then by the power granted to this council, we pass the privileges and responsibilities accorded to Arjihad to his only descendant, Nasuada."
He gently placed a circlet of silver on Nasuada's brow. Taking her hand, he lifted her upright and pronounced,
"I give you our new leader."
For 10 minutes, the Varden and dwarves cheered, thundering their approbation until the hall rang with the clamour. Once their cries subsided, Sabre motioned to Aragorn, whispering,
"Now is the time to fulfil your promise."
At that moment, all noise seemed to cease for Aragorn. His nervousness disappeared too, swallowed in the tide of the moment. Steeling himself with a breath, he and Saphira started toward Jormungandr and Nasuada, each step an eternity. As they walked, he stared at Sabre, Elisari, Umerth, and Falbert, noting their half-smiles, smugness, and on Sabre's part, outright disdain. Behind the council members stood Arya. She nodded in support.
"We are about to change history," said Saphira.
"We're throwing ourselves off a cliff without knowing how deep the water below is."
"Ah, but what a glorious flight!"
With a brief look at Nasuada's serene face, Aragorn bowed and kneeled. Slipping Zarok from its sheath, he placed the sword flat on his palms, then lifted it as if to proffer it to Jormungandr. For a moment, the sword hovered between Jormungandr and Nasuada, teetering on the wire edge of two different destinies. Aragorn felt his breath catch, such a simple choice to balance a life on. And more than a life, a dragon, a king, an empire. Then his breath rushed in, filling his lungs with time once again, and he swung to face Nasuada.
"Out of deep respect and appreciation of the difficulties facing you, I, Aragorn, first rider of the Varden, Shadeslayer and Arjitlam, give you my blade and my fealty, Nasuada."
The Varden and dwarves stared, dumbstruck. In that same instant, the Council of Elders flashed from triumphant gloating to enraged impotence. Their glares burned with the strength and venom of those betrayed. Even Elisari let outrage burst through her pleasant demeanour. Only Jormungandr, after a brief jolt of surprise, seemed to accept the announcement with equanimity. Nasuada smiled and grasped Zarok, placing the sword's tip on Aragorn's forehead, just as before.
"I am honoured that you choose to serve me, Rider Aragorn. I accept, as you accept, all the responsibilities accompanying the station. Rise as my vassal and take your sword."
Aragorn did so, then stepped back with Saphira. With shouts of approval, the crowd rose to their feet, the dwarves stamping in rhythm with their hobnail boots, while human warriors banged swords across shields. Turning to the podium, Nasuada gripped it on either side and looked up at all the people in the amphitheatre.
She beamed at them, pure joy shining from her face.
"People of the Varden!"
Silence.
"As my father did before me, I give my life to you and our cause. I will never cease fighting until the Urgals are vanquished, Galbatorix is dead, and Alagazia is free once more."
More cheering and applause.
"Therefore I say to you, now is the time to prepare. Here in Farthendur, after endless skirmishes, we won our greatest battle. It is our turn to strike back. Galbatorix is weak after losing so many forces, and there will never again be such an opportunity. Therefore I say again, now is the time to prepare, so that we may once more stand victorious."
After more speeches by various personages, including a still glowering Falbird, the amphitheatre began to empty. As Aragorn stood to leave, Oric grabbed his arm, stopping him. The dwarf was wide-eyed.
"Aragorn, did you plan all that beforehand?"
Aragorn briefly considered the wisdom of telling him, then nodded. "Yes." Oric exhaled, shaking his head.
"That was a bold stroke, it was. You've given Nasswada a strong position to begin with. It was dangerous, though, if the reactions of the Council of Elders are anything to judge by. Did Arya approve of this?"
"She agreed it was necessary." The dwarf studied him thoughtfully.
"I'm sure it was. You just altered the balance of power, Aragorn. No one will underestimate you again because of it. Beware the rotten stone. You have earned some powerful enemies today."
He slapped Aragorn on the side and continued past. Saphira watched him go, then said,
"We should prepare to leave, Fathendur. The council will be thirsty for revenge. The sooner we're out of their reach, the better."
A sorceress, a snake, and a scroll. That evening, as Aragorn returned to his quarters from bathing, he was surprised to find a tall woman waiting for him in the hall. She had dark hair, startling blue eyes, and a wry mouth. Wound around her wrist was a gold bracelet shaped like a hissing snake. Aragorn hoped that she wasn't there to ask him for advice like so many of the Varden. "Hajat Lam." She curtsied gracefully. He inclined his head in return. "Can I help you?" "I hope so. I'm Triana, sorceress of Duvrangorgata."
"Really? A sorceress?" he asked, intrigued.
"And battle mage and spy, and anything else the Varden deem necessary. There aren't enough magic users, so we each end up with a half dozen tasks." She smiled, displaying even white teeth. "That's why I came today. We would be honored to have you take charge of our group. You're the only one who can replace the twins." Almost without realizing it, he smiled back. She was so friendly and charming, he hated to say no. "I'm afraid I can't. Saphira and I are leaving Trondheim soon. Besides, I'd have to consult with Nasswada first anyway. And I don't want to be entangled in any more politics, especially not where the twins used to lead." Triana bit her lip. "I'm sorry to hear that." She moved a step closer. "Perhaps we can spend some time together before you have to go. I could show you how to summon and control spirits. It would be educational for both of us." Aragorn felt a hot flush warm his face. "I appreciate the offer, but I'm really too busy at the moment." A spark of anger flared within Triana's eyes, then vanished so quickly he wondered whether he had seen it at all. She sighed delicately. "I understand." She sounded so disappointed and looked so forlorn, Aragorn felt guilty for rebuffing her. "It can't hurt to talk with her for a few minutes," he told himself. "I'm curious. How did you learn magic?" Triana brightened. "My mother was a healer in Surda. She had a bit of power and was able to instruct me in the old ways. Of course, I'm nowhere near as powerful as a rider. None of Duvrangorgata could have defeated Durza alone like you did. That was a heroic deed." Embarrassed, Aragorn stuffed his boots against the ground. "I wouldn't have survived if not for Arya." "You are too modest, Hajat Lam," she admonished. "It was you who struck the final blow. You should be proud of your accomplishment. It's a feat worthy of Vrail himself." She leaned toward him. His heart quickened as he smelled her perfume, which was rich and musky, with a hint of an exotic spice. "Have you heard the songs composed about you? The Varden sing them every night around their fires. They say you've come to take the throne from Galbatorix." "No," said Aragorn, quick and sharp.
That was one rumor he would not tolerate.
They might, but I don't. Whatever my fate may be, I don't aspire to rule.
And it's wise of you not to. What is a king, after all, but a man imprisoned by his duties? That would be a poor reward indeed for the last free rider and his dragon. No, for you, the ability to go and do what you will, and, by extension, to shape the future of Alagaesia. She paused. Do you have any family left in the Empire?
What?
Only a cousin.
Then you're not betrothed?
The question caught him off guard. He had never been asked that before.
No, I'm not betrothed.
Surely there must be someone you care about. She came another step closer, and her ribboned sleeve brushed his arm.
I wasn't close to anyone in Carvajal, he faltered, and I've been travelling since then.
Triana drew back slightly, then lifted her wrist so the serpent bracelet was at eye level.
Do you like him? She inquired.
Aragorn blinked and nodded, though it was actually rather disconcerting.
I call him Lorga. He's my familiar and protector.
Bending forward, she blew upon the bracelet, then murmured,
Siorum Thornessa Avarsharjalvi lifes.
With a dry rustle, the snake stirred to life. Aragorn watched, fascinated, as the creature writhed around Triana's pale arm, then lifted itself and fixed its whirling ruby eyes upon him, wire tongue whipping in and out. Its eyes seemed to expand until they were each as large as Aragorn's fist. He felt as if he were tumbling into their fiery depths. He could not look away, no matter how hard he tried. Then, at a short command, the serpent stiffened and resumed its former position. With a tired sigh, Triana leaned against the wall.
Not many people understand what we magic users do, but I wanted you to know that there are others like you, and we will help if we can.
Impulsively, Aragorn put his hand on hers. He had never attempted to approach a woman this way before, but instinct urged him onward, daring him to take the chance. It was frightening, exhilarating.
If you want, we could go and eat. There's a kitchen not far from here.
She slipped her other hand over his, fingers smooth and cool, so different from the rough grips he was accustomed to.
I'd like that. Shall we?
Triana stumbled forward as the door burst open behind her. The sorceress whirled around, only to yelp as she found herself face to face with Saphira. Saphira remained motionless, except for one lip that slowly lifted to reveal a line of jagged teeth. Then she growled. It was a marvellous growl, richly layered with scorn and menace, that rose and fell through the hall for more than a minute. Listening to it was like enduring a blistering, hackle-raising tirade. Aragorn glared at her the whole time. When it was over, Triana was clenching her dress with both fists, twisting the fabric. Her face was white and scared. She quickly curtsied to Saphira, then, with a barely controlled motion, turned and fled. Acting as if nothing had happened, Saphira lifted a leg and licked a claw.
It was nearly impossible to get the door open, she sniffed.
Aragorn could not contain himself any longer.
Why did you do that? He exploded. You had no reason to interfere.
You needed my help,
she continued, unperturbed.
If I'd needed your help, I would have called.
Don't yell at me,
she snapped, letting her jaws click together. He could sense her emotions boiling with as much turmoil as his.
I'll not have you run around with a slattern who cares more for Aragorn as rider than you as a person.
She wasn't a slattern, roared Aragorn. He pounded the wall in frustration. I'm a man now, Saphira, not a hermit. You can't expect me to ignore women just because of who I am. And it's certainly not your decision to make. At the very least, I might have enjoyed a conversation with her, anything other than the tragedies we've dealt with lately. You're in my head enough to know how I feel. Why couldn't you leave me alone? Where was the harm?
You don't understand.
She refused to meet his eyes.
Don't understand. Will you prevent me from ever having a wife and children? What of a family?
Aragorn.
She finally fixed one great eye on him.
We are intimately linked.
Obviously.
And if you pursue a relationship with or without my blessing and become attached to someone, my feelings will become engaged as well. You should know that. Therefore, and I warn you only once, be careful who you choose, because it will involve both of us.
He briefly considered her words.
Our bond works both ways, however. If you hate someone, I will be influenced likewise. I understand your concern. So you weren't just jealous?
She licked the claw once more.
Perhaps a little.
Aragorn was the one who growled this time. He brushed past her into the room, grabbed Zarok, then stalked away, belting on the sword. He wandered through Trondheim for hours, avoiding contact with everyone. What had occurred pained him, though he could not deny the truth of Saphira's words. Of all the matters they shared, this was the most delicate, and the one they agreed upon least. That night, for the first time since he was captured at Gilead, he slept away from Saphira in one of the dwarves' barracks. Aragorn returned to their quarters the following morning. By unspoken consent, he and Saphira avoided discussing what had transpired.
Further argument was pointless when neither party was willing to yield ground.
Besides, they were both so relieved to be reunited, they did not want to risk endangering their friendship again. They were eating lunch, Saphira tearing at a bloody haunch, when Jasha trotted up. Like before, he stared wide-eyed at Saphira, following her movements as she nibbled off the end of a leg bone. Yes? Asked Aragorn, wiping his chin and wondering if the Council of Elders had sent for them. He had heard nothing from them since the funeral. Jasha turned away from Saphira long enough to say,
Nasuada would like to see you, sir. She's waiting in her father's study.
Sir? Aragorn almost laughed. Only a little while ago he would have been calling people sir, not the other way around. He glanced at Saphira.
Are you done, or should we wait a few minutes?
Rolling her eyes, she fit the rest of the meat into her mouth and split the bone with a loud crack.
I'm done.
All right, said Aragorn, standing. You can go, Jasha. We know the way. It took almost half an hour to reach the study because of the city mountain's size. As during Arjihad's rule, the door was guarded, but instead of two men, an entire squad of battle-hardened warriors now stood before it, alert for the slightest hint of danger. They would clearly sacrifice themselves to protect their new leader from ambush or attack. Though the men could not have failed to recognize Aragorn and Saphira, they barred the way while Nasuada was alerted of her visitors. Only then were the two allowed to enter. Aragorn immediately noticed a change, a vase of flowers in the study. The small purple blossoms were unobtrusive, but they suffused the air with a warm fragrance that for Aragorn evoked summers of fresh-picked raspberries and scythed fields turning bronze under the sun. He inhaled, appreciating the skill with which Nasuada had asserted her individuality without obliterating Arjihad's memory. She sat behind the broad desk, still cloaked in the black of mourning. As Aragorn seated himself, Saphira beside him, she said, Aragorn. It was a simple statement, neither friendly nor hostile. She turned away briefly, then focused on him, her gaze steely and intent. I have spent the last few days reviewing the Varden's affairs, such as they are. It was a dismal exercise. We are poor, overextended and low on supplies, and few recruits are joining us from the Empire. I mean to change that. The dwarves cannot support us much longer, as it's been a lean year for farming, and they've suffered losses of their own. Considering this, I have decided to move the Varden to Surda. It's a difficult proposition, but one I believe necessary to keep us safe. Once in Surda, we will finally be close enough to engage the Empire directly. Even Saphira stirred with surprise.
The work that would involve, said Aragorn. It could take months to get everyone's belongings to Surda, not to mention all the people.
and they'd probably be attacked along the way. I thought King Orin didn't dare openly oppose Galbatorix, he protested. Nasuada smiled grimly. His stance has changed since we defeated the Urgals. He will shelter and feed us and fight by our side. Many Varden are already in Cirda, mainly women and children who couldn't or wouldn't fight. They will also support us, else I will strip our name from them. How, asked Aragorn, did you communicate with King Orin so quickly? The dwarves use a system of mirrors and lanterns to relay messages through their tunnels. They can send a dispatch from here to the western edge of the Beor Mountains in less than a day. Couriers then transport it to Aberon, capital of Cirda. Fast as it is, that method is still too slow, when Galbatorix can surprise us with an Urgal army and give us less than a day's notice. I intend to arrange something far more expedient between Dúvrangor Gata and Hrothgar's magicians before we go. Opening the desk drawer, Nasuada removed a thick scroll. The Varden will depart Farthendur within the month. Hrothgar has agreed to provide us with safe passage through the tunnels. Moreover, he sent a force to Orthiad to remove the last vestiges of Urgals and seal the tunnels, so no one can invade the dwarves by that route again. As this may not be enough to guarantee the Varden's survival, I have a favour to ask of you. Aragorn nodded. He had expected a request or order. That was the only reason for her to have summoned them. I am yours to command. Perhaps. Her eyes flicked to Saphira for a second. In any case, this is not a command, and I want you to think carefully before replying. To help rally support for the Varden, I wish to spread word throughout the Empire that a new rider named Aragorn Shadeslayer and his dragon, Saphira, have joined our cause. I would like your permission before doing so, however.
It's too dangerous, objected Saphira.
Word of our presence here will reach the Empire anyway, pointed out Aragorn. The Varden will want to brag about their victory and Durza's death. Since it'll happen with or without our approval, we should agree to help. She snorted softly.
I'm worried about Galbatorix. Until now, we haven't made it public where our sympathies lie.
Our actions have been clear enough.
Yes, but even when Durza fought you in Trondheim, he wasn't trying to kill you. If we become outspoken in our opposition to the Empire, Galbatorix won't be so lenient again. Who knows what forces or plots he may have kept in abeyance while he tried to gain hold of us. As long as we remain ambiguous, he won't know what to do.
The time for ambiguity has passed, asserted Aragorn. We fought the Urgals, killed Durza, and I have sworn fealty to the leader of the Varden. No ambiguity exists. No. With your permission, I will agree to her proposal.
She was silent for a long while, then dipped her head.
As you wish.
He put a hand on her side before returning his attention to Nasuada and saying,
Do what you see fit. If this is how we can best assist the Varden, so be it.
Thank you. I know it is a lot to ask.
Now, as we discussed before the funeral, I expect you to travel to Ellesmere and complete your training.
With Arya?
Of course. The elves have refused contact with both humans and dwarves ever since she was captured. Arya is the only being who can convince them to emerge from seclusion. Couldn't she use magic to tell them of her rescue?
Unfortunately not. When the elves retreated into Dúeldenvarden after the fall of the Riders, they placed wards around the forest that prevent any thought, item or being from entering it through arcane means, though not from exiting it, if I understood Arya's explanation. Thus, Arya must physically visit Dúeldenvarden before Queen Islandzadi will know that she is alive, you and Saphira exist, and of the numerous events that have befallen the Varden these past months.
Nasuada handed him the scroll. It was stamped with a wax sigil.
This is a missive for Queen Islandzadi, telling her about the Varden's situation and my own plans. Guard it with your life. It would cause a great deal of harm in the wrong hands. I hope that after all that has happened, Islandzadi will feel kindly enough toward us to reinitiate diplomatic ties.
Her assistance could mean the difference between victory and defeat. Arya knows this and has agreed to press our case, but I wanted you aware of the situation too, so you could take advantage of any opportunities that might arise. Aragorn tucked the scroll into his jerkin. When will we leave?
Tomorrow morning. Unless you have something already planned?
No.
Good.
She clasped her hands.
You should know one other person will be travelling with you.
He looked at her quizzically.
King Hrothgar insisted that in the interest of fairness there should be a dwarf representative present at your training, since it affects their race as well. So he's sending Oryk along.
Aragorn's first reaction was irritation. Saphira could have flown Arya and him to Duweldenvarden, thereby eliminating weeks of unnecessary travel. Three passengers, however, were too many to fit on Saphira's shoulders. Oryk's presence would confine them to the ground. Upon further reflection, Aragorn acknowledged the wisdom of Hrothgar's request. It was important for Aragorn and Saphira to maintain a semblance of equality in their dealings with the different races. He smiled.
Ah, well, it'll slow us down, but I suppose we have to placate Hrothgar.
To tell the truth, I'm glad Oryk is coming. Crossing Alagaesia with only Arya was a rather daunting prospect. She's... Nasuada smiled too.
She's different.
Aye. He grew serious again.
Do you really mean to attack the Empire? You said yourself that the Varden are weak. It doesn't seem like the wisest course. If we wait,
she said sternly, Galbatorix will only get stronger.
This is the first time since Morzan was slain that we have even the slightest opportunity of catching him unprepared.
He had no reason to suspect we could defeat the Urgals, which we did thanks to you, so he won't have readied the Empire for invasion.
Invasion? Exclaimed Saphira. And how does she plan to kill Galbatorix when he flies out to obliterate their army with magic?
Nasuada shook her head in response when Aragorn restated the objection.
From what we know of him, he won't fight until Urubain itself is threatened. It doesn't matter to Galbatorix if we destroy half the Empire, so long as we come to him, not the other way around. Why should he bother anyway? If we do manage to reach him, our troops will be battered and depleted, making it all the easier for him to destroy us.
You still haven't answered, Saphira, protested Aragorn.
That's because I can't yet. This will be a long campaign. By its end, you might be powerful enough to defeat Galbatorix, or the elves may have joined us, and their spellcasters are the strongest in Alagaesia. No matter what happens, we cannot afford to delay. Now is the time to gamble and dare what no one thinks we can accomplish. The Varden have lived in the shadows for too long. We must either challenge Galbatorix or submit and pass away.
The scope of what Nasuada was suggesting disturbed Aragorn.
So many risks and unknown dangers were involved, it was almost absurd to consider such a venture.
However, it was not his place to make the decision, and he accepted that. Nor would he dispute it further.
We have to trust in her judgment now.
But what of you, Nasuada? Will you be safe while we're gone? I must think of my vow. It's become my responsibility to ensure that you won't have your own funeral soon.
Her jaw tightened as she gestured at the door and the warriors beyond.
You needn't fear. I am well defended.
She looked down.
I will admit, one reason for going to Cirda is that Orin knows me of old and will offer his protection. I cannot tarry here with you and Arya gone and the Council of Elders still with power. They won't accept me as their leader until I prove beyond doubt that the Varden are under my control, not theirs.
Then she seemed to draw on some inner strength, squaring her shoulders and lifting her chin so she was distant and aloof.
Go now, Aragorn. Ready your horse, gather supplies, and be at the north gate by dawn.
He bowed low, respecting her return to formality, then left with Saphira. After dinner, Aragorn and Saphira flew together. They sailed high above Trondheim, where crenellated icicles hung from the sides of Farthendur, forming a great white band around them. Although it was still hours until night, it was already nearly dark within the mountain. Aragorn threw back his head, savouring the air on his face. He missed the wind. Wind that would rush through the grass and stir the clouds until everything was tousled and fresh. Wind that would bring rain and storms and lash the trees so they bent. For that matter, I missed trees as well, he thought. Fardendur is an incredible place, but it's as empty of plants and animals as Arjihad's tomb. Saphira agreed.
The dwarves seem to think that gems take the place of flowers.
She was silent as the light continued to fade. When it was too dark for Aragorn to see comfortably, she said,
It's late. We should return.
All right. She drifted toward the ground in great lazy spirals, drawing nearer to Trondheim, which glowed like a beacon in the centre of Fardendur. They were still far from the city mountain when she swung her head, saying,
Look!
He followed her gaze, but all he could see was the grey, featureless plain below them.
What?
Instead of answering, she tilted her wings and glided to their left, slipping down to one of the four roads that radiated from Trondheim along the cardinal compass points. As they landed, he noticed a patch of white on a small hill nearby. The patch wavered strangely in the dusk, like a floating candle, then resolved into Angela, who was wearing a pale wool tunic. The witch carried a wicker basket nearly 4 feet across and filled with a wild assortment of mushrooms, most of which Aragorn did not recognize. As she approached, he gestured at them and said, You've been gathering toadstools?
Hello, laughed Angela, putting her load down. Oh no, toadstool is far too general a term. And anyway, they really ought to be called frogstools, not toadstools.
She spread them with her hand.
This one is sulphur tuft, and this is an ink cap. And here's naval cap and dwarf shield, russet tuftshank, blood ring. And that is a spotted deceiver. Delightful, isn't it?
She pointed to each in turn, ending on a mushroom with pink, lavender and yellow splashed in rivulets across its cap.
And that one? He asked, indicating a mushroom with a lightning blue stem, molten orange gills, and a glossy black two-tiered cap.
She looked at it fondly.
Fricke andlat, as the elves might say. The stalk is instant death, while the cap can cure most poisons. It's what Tunivore's nectar is extracted from. Fricke andlat only grows in caves in Duweldenvarden and Fardendur, and it would die out here if the dwarves started carting their dung elsewhere.
Aragorn looked back at the hill and realized that was exactly what it was, a dung heap.
Hello, Saphira, said Angela, reaching past him to pat Saphira on the nose.
Saphira blinked and looked pleased, tail twitching. At the same time, Solemnbum padded into sight, his mouth clamped firmly around a limp rat. Without so much as a flick of his whiskers, the weercat settled on the ground and began to nibble on the rodent, studiously ignoring the three of them.
So, said Angela, tucking back a curl of her enormous hair, off to Ellesmere?
Aragorn nodded. He did not bother asking how she had found out. She always seemed to know what was going on. When he remained silent, she scowled.
Well, don't act so morose. It's not as if it's your execution.
I know.
Then smile, because if it's not your execution, you should be happy. You're as flaccid as Solemnbum's rat. Flaccid, what a wonderful word, don't you think?
That wrung a grin out of him, and Saphira chortled with amusement deep in her throat. I'm not sure it's quite as wonderful as you think, but yes, I understand your point.
I'm glad you understand. Understanding is good.
With arched eyebrows, she hooked a fingernail underneath a mushroom and flipped it over, inspecting its gills as she said,
It's fortuitous we met tonight, as you were about to leave, and I will accompany the Varden to Cirda. As I told you before, I like to be where things are happening, and that's the place.
Aragorn grinned even more.
Well then, that must mean we'll have a safe journey, else you'd be with us.
Angela shrugged, then said seriously, Be careful in Duweldenvarden.
Just because elves do not display their emotions doesn't mean they aren't subject to rage and passion like the rest of us mortals. What can make them so deadly, though, is how they conceal it, sometimes for years.
You've been there?
Once upon a time. After a pause, he asked, What do you think of Naswada's plans?
She's doomed. You're doomed. They're all doomed.
She cackled, doubling over, then straightened abruptly. Notice I didn't specify what kind of doom, so no matter what happens, I predicted it. How very wise of me. She lifted the basket again, setting it on one hip. I suppose I won't see you for a while. So farewell, best of luck, avoid roasted cabbage, don't eat earwax, and look on the bright side of life. And with a cheery wink she strolled off, leaving Aragorn blinking and nonplussed. After an appropriate pause, Solombum picked up his dinner and followed, ever so dignified.
Hrothgar's Gift. Dawn was a half hour away when Aragorn and Saphira arrived at Trondheim's north gate. The gate was raised just enough to let Saphira pass, so they hurried underneath it, then waited in the recessed area beyond, where red jasper pillars loomed above, and carved beasts snarled between the bloody piers. Past those, at the very edge of Trondheim, sat 2 30-foot-high gold griffins. Identical pairs guarded each of the city mountain's gates. No one was in sight. Aragorn held Snowfire's reins. The stallion was brushed, reshod and saddled, his saddlebags bulging with goods. He pawed the floor impatiently. Aragorn had not ridden him for over a week. Before long, Auric ambled up, bearing a large pack on his back and a bundle in his arms.
"No horse?" asked Aragorn, somewhat surprised. "Are we supposed to walk all the way to Duweldenvarden?"
Auric grunted.
"We'll be stopping at Tarnag, just north of here. From there we take rafts along the Arjragni to Edirth, an outpost for trading with the elves. We won't need steeds before Edirth, so I'll use my own feet till then."
He set the bundle down with a clang, then unwrapped it, revealing Aragorn's armour. The shield had been repainted, so the oak tree stood clearly in the centre, and all the dings and scrapes removed. Beneath it was the long mail shirt, burnished and oiled until the steel gleamed brilliantly. No sign existed of where it had been rent when Durza cut Aragorn's back. The coif, gloves, braces, greaves and helmet were likewise repaired.
"Our greatest smiths worked on these," said Auric, "as well as your armour, Saphira. However, since we can't take dragon armour with us, it was given to the Varden, who will guard it against our return."
"Please thank him for me," said Saphira.
Aragorn obliged, then laced on the greaves and braces, storing the other items in his bags. Last of all, he reached for his helm, only to find Auric holding it. The dwarf rolled the piece between his hands, then said,
"Do not be so quick to don this, Aragorn. There is a choice you must make first."
"What choice is that?"
Raising the helmet, Auric uncovered its polished brow, which Aragorn now saw had been altered, etched in the steel with the hammers and stars of Hrothgar and Auric's clan, the Injitum. Auric scowled, looking both pleased and troubled, and said in a formal voice,
"Mein king, Hrothgar, desires that I present this helm as a symbol of the friendship he bears for you. And with it, Hrothgar extends an offer to adopt you as one of Durgrim's Injitum, as a member of his own family."
Aragorn stared at the helm, amazed that Hrothgar would make such a gesture.
"Does this mean I'd be subjected to his rule? If I continue to accrue loyalties and allegiances at this pace, I'll be incapacitated before long, unable to do anything without breaking some oath."
"You don't have to put it on,"
pointed out Saphira.
"And risk insulting Hrothgar? Once again, we're trapped."
"It may be intended as a gift, though. another sign of Otho, not a trap. I would guess he's thanking us for my offer to repair Isidar Mithrim.
That had not occurred to Aragorn, for he had been too busy trying to figure out how the Dwarf King might gain advantage over them.
True, but I think it's also an attempt to correct the imbalance of power created when I swore fealty to Naswada. The dwarves couldn't have been pleased with that turn of events. He looked back at Oric, who was waiting anxiously. How often has this been done?
For a human, never. Hrothgar argued with the Injitim families for a day and a night before they agreed to accept you. If you consent to bear our crest, you will have full rights as clan member. You may attend our councils and give voice on every issue. And,
he grew very sombre,
if you so wish, you will have the right to be buried with our dead.
For the first time, the enormity of Hrothgar's action struck Aragorn. The dwarves could offer no higher honour. With a swift motion, he took the helm from Oric and pressed it down upon his head. I am privileged to join Durgrimst Injitum. Oric nodded with approval and said,
Then take this Nurline, this heart of stone, and cup it between your hands. Yes, like so. You must steel yourself now and prick open a vein to wet the stone. A few drops will suffice. To finish, repeat after me. Os ildom crannu karndor thargan zitman un grimsvor fomf ederas rakskilfs. Narho is belgond.
It was a lengthy recitation, and all the longer because Oric stopped to translate every few sentences. Afterward, Aragorn healed his wrist with a quick spell.
Whatever else the clans may say about this business, observed Oric, you have behaved with integrity and respect. They cannot ignore that.
He grinned.
We are of the same clan now, eh? You are my foster brother. Under more normal circumstance, Hrothgar would have presented your helm himself, and we would have held a lengthy ceremony to commemorate your induction into Durgrimst Injitum. But events move too swiftly for us to tarry. Fear not, you are being slighted, though. Your adoption shall be celebrated with the proper rituals when you and Sephira next return to Vardendur. You shall feast and dance and have many pieces of paper to sign in order to formalize your new position.
I look forward to the day, said Aragorn.
He was still preoccupied with sifting through the numerous possible ramifications of belonging to Durgrimst Injitum. Sitting against a pillar, Oric shrugged off his pack and drew his axe, which he proceeded to twirl between his palms. After several minutes, he leaned forward, glaring back into Trondheim.
Bazul Nurlar, where are they? Arya said she would be right here. Ha! Elves only concept of time is late. And even later.
Have you dealt with them much? Asked Aragorn, crouching. Sephira watched with interest. The dwarf laughed suddenly.
Etta, only Arya, and then sporadically because she travelled so often. In 7 decades I've learned but one thing about her. You can't rush an elf. Trying is like hammering a file. It might break, but it'll never bend.
Aren't dwarves the same?
Ah, but stone will shift given enough time.
Oric sighed and shook his head.
Of all the races, elves change the least, which is one reason I'm reluctant to go.
But we'll get to meet Queen Islanzadi and see Ellesmira, and who knows what else.
When was the last time a dwarf was invited into Duweldenvarden? Oric frowned at him.
Scenery means nothing. Urgent tasks remain in Trondheim and our other cities, yet I must tramp across Alagazia to exchange pleasantries and sit and grow fat as you are tutored. It could take years.
Years? Still, if that's what is required to defeat Shades and the Razak, I'll do it.
Sephira touched his mind.
I doubt Naswada will let us stay in Ellesmira for more than a few months. With what she told us, we'll be needed fairly soon.
At last,
said Auric, pushing himself upright. Approaching were Naswada, slippers flashing beneath her dress like mice darting from a hole, Jormunda and Arya, who bore a pack like Auric's. She wore the same black leather outfit Aragorn had first seen her in, as well as her sword. At that moment it struck Aragorn that Arya and Naswada might not approve of him joining the Injitum. Guilt and trepidation shot through him as he realized that it had been his duty to consult Naswada first. And Arya! He cringed, remembering how angry she had been after his first meeting with the Council of Elders. Thus, when Naswada stopped before him, he averted his eyes, ashamed. But she only said, "You accepted." Her voice was gentle, restrained. He nodded, still looking down. "I wondered if you would. Now, once again, all three races have a hold on you. The dwarves can claim your allegiance as a member of Durgrimst Injitum. The elves will train and shape you, and their influence may be the strongest, for you and Saphira are bound by their magic, and you have sworn fealty to me, a human. Perhaps it is best that we share your loyalty." She met his surprise with an odd smile, then pressed a small bag of coins into his palm and stepped away. Jormunda extended a hand, which Aragorn shook, feeling a bit dazed.
"Have a good trip, Aragorn. Guard yourself well."
"Come," said Arya, gliding past them into the darkness of Farthan Dûr. "It is time to leave. Heyerdahl has set, and we have far to go."
"Aye,"
Auric agreed. He pulled out a red lantern from the side of his pack. Naswada looked them over once more.
"Very well. Aragorn and Saphira, you have the Varden's blessings as well as mine. May your journey be safe. Remember, you carry the weight of our hopes and expectations, so acquit yourself honourably."
"We will do our best," promised Aragorn. Gripping Snowfire's reins firmly, he started after Arya, who was already several yards away. Auric followed, then Saphira. As Saphira passed Naswada, Aragorn saw her pause and lightly lick Naswada on the cheek. Then she lengthened her stride, catching up with him. As they continued north along the road, the gate behind them shrank smaller and smaller until it was reduced to a pinprick of light, with two lonely silhouettes, where Naswada and Jormunda remained watching. When they finally reached Farthan Dûr's base, they found a pair of gigantic doors, 30 feet tall, open and waiting. Three dwarf guards bowed and moved away from the aperture. Through the doors was a tunnel of matching proportions, lined with columns and lanterns for the first 50 feet. After that, it was as empty and silent as a mausoleum. It looked exactly like Farthan Dûr's western entrance, but Aragorn knew that this tunnel was different. Instead of burrowing through the mile-thick base to emerge outside, it proceeded underneath mountain after mountain, all the way to the dwarf city, Tarnag.
"Here is our path," said Auric, lifting the lantern.
He and Arya crossed over the threshold, but Aragorn held back, suddenly uncertain. While he did not fear the dark, neither did he welcome being surrounded by eternal night until they arrived at Tarnag. And once he entered the barren tunnel, he would again be hurling himself into the unknown, abandoning the few things he had grown accustomed to among the Varden in exchange for an uncertain destiny.
"What is it?"
asked Saphira.
"Nothing."
He took a breath,
then strode forward,
allowing the mountain to swallow him in its depths.
Hammer and Tongs. 3 days after the Razak's arrival, Roran found himself pacing uncontrollably along the edge of his camp in the Spine. He had heard nothing since Olbrych's visit, nor was it possible to glean information by observing Carvajal. He glared at the distant tents where the soldiers slept, then continued pacing. At midday, Roran had a small, dry lunch. Wiping his mouth with the back of his hand, he wondered, how long are the Razak willing to wait?
If it was a test of patience, he was determined to win. To pass the time, he practiced his archery on a rotting log, stopping only when an arrow shattered on a rock embedded in the trunk.